right. Hello and welcome to the Grace Hour Show, a Christian program that takes a dive into our daily challenges and helps us learn our faith in a practical way. My name is Liz Robbins, and I'm joined by a distinguished host, Philippe Siragi, in the studio today. We've got a great week this week. We're going to be talking about some minor prophets. And today we are going to go with the first one, which is Jonah. And I was telling Philippe that actually Jonah is my absolute favorite book of the Old Testament, which might be a surprise to some people. Not Psalms, not Isaiah even. Isaiah is so good, but I love Jonah. So I'm really happy to be here with you.
This is awesome.
And it's great to be with you specifically, Philippe.
Thank you. Ditto.
Samesies. We're going to have a lot of fun. This is a really short book, which is kind of surprising because there's so much in it. But it's four very short chapters. It only takes up two pages of the Bible in my Bible, and you can read it very quickly. But I think it's an amazing book because it's one of those books that you learn as a kid if you grew up in the church. This is one of those really popular Bible stories for Sunday school, because he gets swallowed by a whale. And that's just fun for kids. And then they do the coloring sheet with the whale and all of that. But I actually, when I was doing a little bit of studying for this, one of the books that I was looking at was Wilmington's Guide to the Bible. And it just had a lot of fun facts about the book of Jonah. But one of the things he said was that people can get distracted by the, what was the word he used? I wrote it down. Like the incidentals. And there's like interesting facts within this, like the whale and him getting thrown overboard and Nineveh and the people of Nineveh, the gourd at the end. But he said it's important that we distinguish between the incidentals and the essentials. So the incidentals would be the fish or the whale, the gourd, the boat he gets thrown over, Nineveh, the east wind. But the essentials is here God and Jonah. Like God and man. Like this is the essential. Is that this is a conversation and a look between who God is and who we are, like in our nature, I think. So I don't know how we want to go about this. We can kind of, I assume people know the story of Jonah. But we could give a quick synopsis.
I think you could.
Do you want to do that?
Well, you have kids, so you can tell it like better than I would.
Well, I did. On the way to school today, I told my kids that I was doing this. And I was like, you guys know, you know, the story of Jonah? And they, I was like, you know, what do you think the point of the story of Jonah is? And right away I said, don't say the whale. And they all just started laughing because that's what they were going to say, the whale. Because that's what they hear. But I attempted in our the 7-minute drive we had to school to give him a different perspective or a slightly deeper look at Jonah. But really what we see here is this is a, first of all, he was a real historical figure. He's mentioned in 2 Kings. So we know even the time that he lived, and it matches. Nineveh was a real city, part of the Assyrian Empire that was terrifying and cruel and very powerful. They were known for their cruelty. So Jonah was a real prophet, real man. They mention his hometown where he was born, name of his dad. So this is not a fairy tale or just a moral, myth that some would maybe like to think. So he's called by God to go to Nineveh and he's like, no, thank you. I'm not doing that. And at the beginning in chapter one, he doesn't even give a reason. They don't explain why he doesn't go.
I'm out of here.
And I was thinking that probably it was because it was so obvious, like why he didn't want to go. Like for a Jewish Israelite prophet to be asked to go to the city of Nineveh within the Assyrian Empire, one of the biggest cities for one of the cruelest empires that was bound to conquer Israel. Was such an absurd request. And so they don't even say it at the beginning. They just say he flees.
He ran.
He ran. And so he goes, he tries to get on a ship to go to Tarshish and trouble comes. God sends a storm. The sailors who are not believers in the one true God mm-hmm. at this point, try to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. They say, everybody go pray to your gods and maybe we can, you know, get out of this yes. alive. And then they drew lots.
Yes.
And it's Jonah who's the problem. So God was like, I'm going to use the lots here to let you know.
Yeah.
And so they're like, we're really sorry, but we have to throw you overboard. And it's kind of cool to see how these sailors actually believe mm-hmm. and they call on Jehovah,
yes.
the, you know, the one true God that they didn't know about before.
Yeah.
And so long story short, he gets thrown overboard, swallowed by a great fish. The Hebrew word and the Greek word, because this Jesus mentions this yeah. book,
Matthew 12,
which is really
right?
cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
It actually translates as sea monster. So it's not necessarily a great sperm whale
no.
or something. We don't know what it was, but suffice to say, he's swallowed by a large sea creature and he has this finally has a moment of humility. And recognizing that actually
3 days.
you can't actually escape from God.
Yeah.
And there's this famous last line is in verse chapter 2, verse 9, where he says, or let's read 8. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon the dry land. So it looks like Jonah's back on track. He was like backslidden.
Yeah.
He gets it now. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Here I'm going. So now he goes to Nineveh, and it's a huge city. Again, this is very historically accurate.
Mm-hmm.
People believe that there was up to 150,000 people living in Nineveh. It was mm-hmm. one of the biggest cities within the Assyrian Empire. And it says here, it takes 3 days journey to cross it. And he goes into the city and he lets them know that Nineveh will be overthrown. It will be destroyed in 40 days. And the people of Nineveh believed God.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 5,
mm-hmm.
like major plot twist here.
Yes.
And, they called for a fast. And so the entire city and the king of Nineveh included in verse 6, everybody fasts and prays, hoping Verse 9, who knows, God may turn and relent and turn from his fierce anger so that we may not perish.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly what ends up happening. And then in chapter 4, Jonah's...
Plot twist number 2.
yeah. The prophet
yeah.
who went and we were saying he's single-handedly responsible for like the greatest revival in recorded history,
mm-hmm.
an entire city,
yeah.
Turns to the Lord and he's so angry.
Yeah.
And it says that he was displeased exceedingly. And this is one of my favorite chapters in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love this whole thing because it's such a, and I want to give you a chance to talk, but what happens here at the end of chapter of this book in chapter 4 is Jonah's angry with God
mm-hmm.
and he says, just kill me, take me now. Like, I don't yeah. want to live anymore because of God relenting against this evil enemy city mm-hmm. that was the Ninevites. And he goes into the wilderness to die. And God raises up a gourd, which is, you know, basically just a, we don't know exactly what the plant was, but it was a plant with large enough leaves that it mm-hmm. could create shade for him and give him relief from the heat and the sun. And it saves him from his discomfort in verse 6. And Jonah was exceedingly glad because of the plant. And then God appoints a worm to attack the plant and it withers. And so when the sun rose, God brought a scorching east wind and the sun beat down the head of Jonah so that he was faint. And he asked again that he might die. It's better for me to die than to live, he says. And here's this question that I want to talk about, which mm-hmm. is God says, do you do well to be angry? And here he says, do you do well to be angry for the plant? He had asked this of him in verse 4 as well. Do you do well to be angry? So God mm-hmm. is, he's like trying to counsel Jonah
yeah.
through his feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And another way to put it is it right for you to be angry? Other translations say, and another one this do you do well? It's like, is your anger well placed?
Yeah.
Which I thought was cool. So that,
yes.
That tells you, that's a synopsis. And I'd love to hear your thoughts. We could go so many directions. So
yeah, I was going to say, there's so many great points. You know,
yeah.
Like, yeah. So I think the first thing I'd like to go back with at the beginning, I think that the one of the essential is God and man, right? And that's the whole point of the Bible, regardless of the book you're reading. The whole point of salvation, the whole point of incarnation of Christ, the whole point of the prophets, the whole point of God seeking Adam in the Garden of Eden, the whole point of the prophets in the Old Testament and the Apostle Paul and the missionaries is God and men. Like, there's a reconciliation that needs to happen. And that's interesting to me, which leads to the other great point that we're just discussing, how, you know, the most successful prophet of the Old Testament is the least spiritual of all, you know, because you think about Isaiah didn't do anything, so much so that God sent Jeremiah after that because he failed into having the people repent before sending the deportation. Therefore, Jeremiah was sent. And the only message Jeremiah had was, you have to go with the program and be deported. So the great prophets that we're thinking, people say, well, you know, I like Jonah better than Isaiah. The point is, it's amazing because it's such a great, and maybe we could talk about this a little bit, like such a great unifier, but also a point of humility when you realize, like, none of what we do really matters if we don't understand this is between God and people. So Jonah was wrong in assessing. And what's amazing about this, verse 3, you know, Jonah rose and went to Nineveh. And then, so he explained the story you were saying. And then, so he, chapter 4, verse 2, so he prayed, Jonah prayed to the Lord and said, "Ha, Lord, what was not this what I said when I was still in my country? Mm-hmm. Therefore I fled previously to Tarshish, and for I know you are gracious and merciful." So, and slow to anger. So he knows who God is. He hates that. And
he hates that for the Ninevites.
Yes, yes, which is so interesting. So the guy is completely out of whack. He's completely, you know, he's not in tune with the Spirit at all. But he gets the most successful ministry of all the prophets in the Old Testament. And that goes back to your first point. It's between God and man. It has nothing to do. Yeah, you have a leadership role in many places. I have some leadership role in the church as well. And we're looking at this, and none of what we do really matters if we lose that point. And I think maybe we could talk about that a little bit. Mm. Right?
Yeah, because it's so true that oftentimes it's shocking that we could have such arrogance, but we do think like this sometimes, which is that we should have a say in who deserves the grace of God, who deserves the mercy of God. We can often rate people, you know, we give them grades, you know, like how bad they are. And if they get to a certain point, they're just too bad. And that's clearly, where Jonah was at. And I just find that highly relatable.
Yeah.
Because when we do tend towards the self-righteous side of ourselves, which we all have.
Yes.
But those of us who are goody goodies, I'm a recovering goody goody. those of us who value right and wrong and justice, because God's given those things, he's put that in us, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we value that over God as an actual person and not a concept, then we could be very much like Jonah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's such a great reminder to us that what Jonah even said, he said salvation belongs to the Lord. That means what he was saying there is, I'm going to go because you decide.
Yeah.
You are Lord. You are Jehovah. You decide who is saved. You're the only one who can save.
Yeah.
So he got it right in words.
Mm-hmm.
But then when God saved, when he offered his salvation that belongs to him to these people, Jonah said, I knew it.
I said it, then I knew it.
And I love that reaction because, first of all, it tells you that Jonah knew God.
Yeah.
Like he knew, and not to downplay that, let's point out, like, one of the things that is so clear that we can take from the book of Jonah is there is a beautiful description of the character of God here, right? Like it's listed even in, it's being said by pouting Jonah.
Yeah.
But he's saying, I knew that you are gracious, merciful, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love, and relenting from disaster. This is God's character.
Yeah.
That he knew.
Yes.
And I think it's cool that he said in his prayer in chapter 2, in verse 8, those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really beautiful. He's saying those who don't believe in the one true God are missing out on the opportunity to experience steadfast love, true, unconditional, unending love, which comes from only God.
Yes.
And salvation is that, isn't it? It's his steadfast love.
Yes.
So again, he's got it. But then when he sees it played out for people that he just cannot love, he did not love these people.
Yeah.
It really angered him. And then God asked this amazing question. I love this question. Do you do well to be angry?
Yes.
Is this anger well placed?
Yeah.
I feel like I've asked my kids that question, you know? They're like huffing and puffing about something. I'm like, I don't know if you got the right angle on this one.
Yes.
They need some help, a little perspective, because they see it from their point of view. And that's where this is so relatable. And and God is being relatable.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's amazing.
Yes.
Like he's coming down to this angry, resentful, upset Jonah to ask him to reconsider. Like, I've used you. You've been a part of saving an entire city.
Mm-hmm.
120,000 is what he says.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to understand my heart.
Yes.
Like, he wanted to connect with Jonah. And that's why this book is unusual. A lot of the prophets, the books of the prophets, are about what they've done and their words, their message. You know, they each kind of have a unique message, a focus, a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But the book of Jonah is about God and Jonah.
Yes.
I mean, and yes, we get to see the salvation of Nineveh, but it's really about God's relationship to Jonah and Jonah's relationship to God. It's really cool.
It is. And it's interesting how, I don't know if you have been in this place, but sometimes, you know, and I recently it happened, I'm not going to give details, but you can tell someone who wrongs you or somebody you love, and like, it's really, okay, this is like, there's a lie involved, there's whatever, and then, but you see them prosper.
Mm.
It's the same situation. Like, you know, he was like, maybe, I don't know, maybe he had some issues, personal issues with the Ninevites. Maybe some of his family members were taken in slavery or something. We don't know, because at this point they were basically running the whole area.
Yeah.
So, and how mad we can get when we see God seemingly favoring. And there's so many layers of things wrong in that, like, misplaced anger. You were saying number one is, I'm mad because God favors somebody else. Who am I?
Mm.
Number two, who am I to think that God should favor me between me and them? Because I'm thinking, like, I'm a Christian and whatever I'm talking about is situation with non-Christians.
Mm.
Obviously, God is going to go on the side of the Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. Maybe you need some humility. Maybe you need to be humble. Maybe you need to learn grace. And maybe they need salvation. And God favoring them in the situations will help them see the mercy of God. So how wrong we are easily, like, because we look at Jonah and thinking this guy is a pathetic moron, you know, and then until you break it down, realize, well, okay, that pathetic moron looks a lot like my pathetic moron inside, you know, and that's what I like about it. So I don't know what you have to say about it, but I think it's so interesting when we look at this and realize that's why it's relatable in that way. It's not just like this idea. Because it's also, in the other side of that, it gives us like a sense of relief. Like, it's not about me, actually. It's if God calls me to do something, he's going to do it.
Mm.
And thank God I'm not in the equation, really, because I would ruin it, everything.
Yeah.
Because I don't, we have no word there saying what he said, actually. You know, where he entered the city, you know, 40 days. And the only thing he says, 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. And that's it. Like, no mercy. God loves you. No, he's just trying to, he goes with a bare minimum of messages. You know, it's, I'm going to scare them. They won't care. I'm not going to give them any details. No mention of mercy, love, anything. And the basic message 101 completely worked. So he put all the chances on his side that he wouldn't work. And he did. I just love that.
It's amazing because the idea that we should have a say in who God favors, who God gives his grace and mercy to. If we really walk that whole road, like, that's terrifying. It's a really, really bad idea.
Absolutely.
And yet we often can think that way. Again, I agree. I don't think that Jonah's ridiculous. I think he's all of us.
Yes.
And I had two examples from parables from the New Testament that I think are really cool because they kind of bring this home. And the first one is the story of the prodigal son, actually. Yes. When you think about the prodigal son, and again, you focus on the prodigal son, but I want to draw attention to the other brother, the older brother. So when the prodigal son comes back after he squandered his father's inheritance. Mm-hmm. He didn't stay and help with the family responsibilities. Mm-hmm. He in every way was not deserving of the father running to him with open arms. And then saying, bring out the feast and put the robe on him and give him the ring. He did not deserve it.
Yes.
And we see that the older brother resents him.
Yes.
He says, and he was like in the fields.
Yeah.
Like there was no, he was the goody goody. He was the righteous son. He was the one who said, I deserve this. So that's why I'm going to get this inheritance.
Yes.
But he doesn't. And again, both of them, the prodigal son thought he wouldn't welcome him home. He's like, maybe I'll just be allowed to be a servant, you know, but it's better than eating with the pigs.
Yes.
So both of them didn't understand the father's heart.
Absolutely.
And the older brother is resentful of his father's generosity. Mm-hmm. So he thinks he earned his sonship and that son doesn't deserve that sonship. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But the father says to the older brother, all that I have has always been yours. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, this is who I am. You know me. Everything that I have is yours. Not because you've been working in the fields, but because you're my son.
Yes.
And he's returning prodigal son. Mm-hmm. He's my son.
Yeah.
So that you can see the parallel here that Jonah is trying to show, like, these people don't deserve it.
Yes.
They don't deserve to be your children like I do, or like the people of Israel do.
Yes.
So then the other one is in Matthew 20, which is maybe, I think everyone's pretty familiar with this parable, but this is the one of the laborers in the vineyard where the master brings laborers in and he promised them a wage.
Yes.
And then there's some that he hires way towards the end of the day.
Yeah.
And they all get paid the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I can just hear my kids being like, yeah, this isn't fair. Like, not cool.
Yes.
Not cool. But the verse that I want to read is, so Matthew 20, it says in verse 15, and imagine that this is God saying this to Jonah. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you begrudge my generosity? And we remember Jonah said to the Lord, salvation belongs to the Lord.
Yeah.
And God is saying, do you do well to be angry?
Yes.
Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or would you begrudge my generosity? Isn't that incredible? Like, God forbid that we would in any way desire to limit or hinder the grace of God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to begrudge him.
Yes.
First of all, what belongs to him? First of all, you have no right.
Yeah.
You have no right to say what he should and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
But that we would in our hearts begrudge that it's just tragic because he wants us to be a part of it.
Yes.
Like he wants Jonah to celebrate with him.
Yeah.
Like they were lost and now they're found.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, he's not super interested. But I think it speaks to us in that way. So we had Thanksgiving in America a few weeks ago. I think it's interesting. We're talking to the student. I teach the GGCA seniors in Christian school twice a week. And we took that week to discuss Thanksgiving. So I brought them some quotes that I like from one of my favorite authors, J.K. Chesterton. Mm. And it's interesting how the feedback that I got from them was so interesting. Like, you know, and one of the points he makes is gratitude is the highest form of thought. That's one of the things he says.
Wow.
Well, thankfulness, gratitude is the highest form of thought. And I asked the student, what do you think it means by that?
Wow.
And one of the students said, and she said, I think it means that we're so, we think so highly of ourselves, then we're entitled, therefore we're not thankful. But if we think of others, whatever we have is a plus. And so she said it simply, but it's so true. And I think it relates in that way that I don't think Jonah or myself, I don't think I know how much grace you required for me to be saved. I don't think I know how much grace you requires for me to be standing up today.
Yeah.
You know, like if, you know, David's asked the question, if you were count the sins, who would stand up? Who would be able to? I don't think we understand that. You know, I think if I were to describe my salvation in my life today, I would say, well, today I was walking in the street. There was a puddle. I fell in it. And God is thinking, well, you were 2,000 miles off the coast when I saved you. That's not a puddle. You're in the middle of the ocean. You know, so that's how bad it is. And then I think it's the same thing with him. Jonah is thinking, well, we're the good guys. Because I like how, and something I just thought about, you know, we were discussing. So he's thinking about the other guys. Their problem is they have worthless idols. That's the only sin for him that matters. Mm. So I don't have idols. They have idols. They're the worst. And God says, there's more to the law than this, you know. Hmm. And I think it's the same way, you know, you remember in Luke 11 when Mary and Martha, you know, their brother dies, right? It's Luke 11, right? And Lazarus dies. And then at some point, you know, it's interesting because Jesus comes after 3 days. Martha comes to Jesus and she tells him exactly what Mary's going to tell him a few verses later. If you would have been here, my brother would not have died. Mm. And this is so revealing to me because this is just like Jonah. We think we know who God is, but we don't, because the point she makes indicates that she doesn't think he's capable of raising the dead people.
Yeah.
He's capable of healing alive. So you had your chance. 3 days ago, you would have been useful to me. Right. Today, you're not.
Right.
And she's about to be blown away because basically he's going to resurrect the dead. But before he does, she's arguing with him about resurrection. He says, don't you know? You know, right. I know about resurrection, about the end. She goes Amazing. On all 4-year Bible college to him. Like, I know my theology, you know? Yeah. So he, and then at the end he says, but I am the resurrection. Mm. And then she stops speaking. And then Mary comes and says, don't you know if we'd have been here 3 days ago or whatever, and you could have seen me.
Yeah.
So I think it's the same here. Like, I think it's the same with me. I tell God, what is wrong with him? But you had your chance.
Yeah.
This is what your opportunity. Like, my timing was impeccable and God, you messed it up.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times do I find myself in this situation where I don't agree with God, but then the same times I spoke to the students this morning. I was at GGC and telling them there's many questions we can't answer because God's mind is so greater than ours. We would never, and I know that, but I don't agree with it when it comes to me.
Yeah.
And I think I relate to Jonas in so many ways because I think I know salvation belongs to the Lord, but consult me before you give it to them. I know it's yours. You can, I know theoretically you can give it to whoever you want.
Yes.
Just give me a call first before you hand it to them.
Yeah.
And I, right?
Well, it reminds me of, did you ever read the book The Shack?
Yes, yes.
Or see the movie. The movie gives a great visual.
Yes.
But there's a scene in the book, and I think it they do a good job in the movie, and it's where the premise of the book is that this man cannot move past the murder of his daughter.
Yes.
He's living in so much grief, but also rage and unforgiveness that has paralyzed him. And he goes through this fascinating journey. I recommend the book. It's a great book.
It's great.
But there's a scene where he's led into a cave, and there's a throne there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a woman sitting on the throne, and she's meant to represent wisdom sitting on the throne of judgment. And she offers him the seat.
Yes.
She says, why don't you come and sit up here? But before she does that, she paints the picture of how complex it would be to accurately discern and judge a situation.
Yeah.
And she does it in a really, you know, incredible way that's very personal to him, because she explains, you know, you believe that this murderer should go to hell. He doesn't deserve forgiveness. He doesn't deserve anything. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're stuck. But then she paints a picture of a boy who, you know, he's a young man, and he burns the house down with his father in it, but it was because he was beaten, and he doesn't realize that this is about his own father who was abusive towards him.
Yeah.
So I can't explain the whole thing in depth, but the point is that he was given the opportunity to sit in the, in the seat of judgment. And he realized, even with his deep desire to condemn this person who took his daughter from him, who murdered her brutally, that he couldn't do it. He would not do it well. And that actually we'd all be condemned, or we'd all be given grace. It's really one or the other. And I think what you were saying earlier about that, we don't know what it took for God to save, like, me, not us, plural, general, but me personally, what it took. But if we, if our inclination is to minimize it, like, well, I mean, it took a lot for him to save that guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, he had to do some things, but like, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
If that's our inclination, which those who are on the goody goody self-righteous side, it's very easy. I've caught myself thinking that way many times when I was, especially when I was younger and before God really convicted me of this. If our inclination is to minimize what God had to do for us, then we are very similar to Jonah.
Yeah.
And we need to have a little reckoning where God says, do you do well to think this way? Do you do well to begrudge me my generosity and my grace? Do you really think it would be good if I withheld my hand when it comes to grace?
Yeah.
Because we were enemies of God. I was an enemy of God. And I don't know all that it took to bring me into peace with God, to stand before him fully justified. Yeah. I don't really, I could never comprehend it. And that's the humility.
Yes.
Like, that's the place where you just sit in front of the cross and you are just thankful.
Yeah.
This idea of gratitude. I think that's so true.
Yeah. And I don't think Jonah realized, like, okay, well, I don't have idols. Therefore, I'm better than you. And God says, well, there's a few thousand pages of my law. So I don't think there's a lot of things there that you don't realize. And the point is also, I like what you said, if you go back to your first point, it's about God and man. Hmm. What I like about this, in English, we have this expression, you know, like killing two birds with one stone, you know. So sorry about the birds, but for the animal lovers. But I think God has a way of killing an infinite number of birds with one stone. Because when you look at what happened, so not only what Jonah was changed, just like Job was changed. You know, my eyes have seen you, and then my ears have seen you, and now my eyes have seen you. So at the end of Jonah, we don't know what happened, but he learned his lesson, you know, because the book ends abruptly, but he learned the lesson. But also the guys on the boat that you were saying, they turned to God. People in Nineveh turned to God.
Yeah.
So it's like there's so many stones, there's so many birds with this one stone of God just making a call. I'm going to call you. He could have called another prophet. This guy is going to fail so miserably that 2,000, you know, like thousands of years later, Liz and Philip are going to talk about this on Grace Hour. That's that's how useful this is.
Epic of a fail.
that's like, and how that big of a relatable fail.
Yeah.
And that speaks to us and realize, oh my God, you know. So it's there's so many aspects to the fact, first, he doesn't know how much he took for God to save him, just like I don't understand mercy, obviously, because when God favors my enemies, I don't like it. And the other thing is also how relieving it is. I tell this story sometimes. People ask me the question, what's the place of work in the life of a Christian? I remember, like, I don't have a lot of memories from my childhood with my dad. My parents got divorced early, but I remember once I was maybe 5 or 6 years old, my dad is remodeling the kitchen, you know, so there's, ask your husband, who is a professional high-end builder, you know, if he likes to have his son around when he's the customer, if it's helpful or not. And I think it's the same thing. I remember being, you know, my mom tells me the story, like, I'm around with a hammer, which is a plastic hammer. Of course, I'm hammering stuff around. Of course, I'm super proud. Look at this kitchen. It's awesome. You know, it's my dad and I. You know, well, the two things I've learned later on. Number one is when I grabbed the wrong hammer, which is the real one, I made holes in the wall, which he had to repair, so he lost sometimes. And number two, I didn't contribute to anything, really. And number three, the only thing that I took out of that is I realized later on, it's a relationship. And I think it's exactly how I feel about the works that God has prepared for us, is the fact that, so none of, he could have chosen anybody else. The reason why he chose Jonah, because Jonah needed it, not the Ninevites.
Yeah.
They needed the word of salvation, not Jonah to deliver it. And I think it's so humbling in that way to realize that, okay, so my effort, at the end of the day is the same, is as valuable as how much I put in that kitchen 45 years ago.
Wow.
It was completely useless. And the worst is that instead of completing the work in 3 days, maybe he did in 4 or 5 days because I went in the way.
Yeah.
And he didn't complain because I'm his son. So yeah. That's how much I contribute.
He wanted you there with him.
That's how much I contribute to the work of God.
Yeah.
And this here is helpful for us to remember
that. You know, that's like, really good. I like that a lot.
You do? Well,
I go
ahead and use it.
I mean, yeah, because I think, again, it's just we're so quick to forget this. That, like, God is so great and he is so capable.
Yes.
And he is so completely whole and content and himself without us. And he doesn't need us. But he wants us.
Yeah.
And that is remarkable. And it's better. If God needed us, that would not be a better universe. That would not be a better scenario.
Horrible.
I mean, if somebody says, I don't need you, we're like, oh, you know, we want to be needed.
Yes.
But we don't truly want God to say that.
Yes.
That if that were to be true, he first of all would not be God, of course.
Yes.
So somehow we can irrationally think that it would be better if God needed me and my agreement and my, like you said, my efforts. But really there's so much rest knowing that he doesn't need us, but he wants us.
Yes.
And he clearly wants us to be a part of his work, which is just mind blowing that he would say, you know what? I'm going to have Jonah in the mix for this one. You know, he didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
He could have just appeared to the Ninevites and just, you know, but throughout the Bible, we see that God is always stepping down to us.
Mm-hmm.
He is desiring to have this relationship with us without it being manipulative, without it being him just controlling us. But he wants us.
Yes.
And I think this is a beautiful reminder that we should be so thankful that God's salvation is his and it's his alone.
Yes.
And we can rest that the Lord is the Lord, and we're so glad that he is.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is also, I mean, that's one point we discussed before the show, is all this, like all the birds in with this one stone, is how God cares and about other people outside of the elect, you know, because I think it's part of the humbling process where we think as Christians,
that's a good
and it
point.
Goes all over the place, like, you know, like how, as a Christian in my country or this country, how I think God must answer my prayers, things need to go my way.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm favored in all the way. And I think we take the moral high ground based on what we think we deserve versus, you know, God's thoughts. And also, so what it means what Jonah means to us is that God is interested in the Ninevites. The Ninevites is the worst possible people outside of Israel. And then, but throughout the scriptures, you see that God is reaching out. You know, I think you and I were talking earlier about Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, who's presenting the Bible as a high priest for the Most High, but it was way before he's a Midianite. He's not a Hebrew.
Right.
So he's a Midianite, which is a people somewhere around in the desert who had a revelation of some form of law and sacrifices before Moses got it for his people. So God is reaching out. And then think about, you know, the reason why Israel was, the Hebrews were 400 years in captivity in Egypt is because God told Abraham, I cannot give you that land right away because I need to take it away from the Ammonites and other people. But those guys have not reached the ultimate epitome of their evil. I have to give them so much chance. He gave them 400 years.
Wow.
So he favored the enemies of Israel for 400 years to give them a chance to repent before he gave Israel what he promised them. It says how much God cares about the lost more than we do, and how this message also with Jonah just brings that out, right?
Yeah, I mean, you said like that we may think we have the moral high ground, and I think the Jewish people, it was one of their major failings when Christ appeared was that they really were standing up here with the law saying everybody else didn't even have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And they used the law and God's word as a way to reject people. And of course, like we know now that wasn't Christ's heart. It wasn't the heart of God that his word, his design, his intent, his laws would be used to reject people.
Yes.
And I think we can easily do that. And I would think like God forbid that I would be a person who, when I see someone be saved from, you know, horrible life, sinful life, that I wouldn't rejoice. Mm-hmm. Like that I wouldn't say that glorifies God. And isn't that what we're here to do, is bring glory to God and honor him for all his wondrous works. Mm-hmm. And for him to save a sinner is the most wonderful thing. You know, he has done so many wonderful things, but that is the most wondrous thing that he has ever done, is to save a sinner, go that whole distance. And we should be rejoicing. Mm-hmm. We do not do well to be angry when we see God's undeserved favor, his grace poured out on anyone.
Yeah.
And I think that is what hopefully Jonah learned and moved forward in. And I mean, I think it's a huge, very relevant discussion for us too.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
And that's this was good.
That's a wrap. Oh, that was a good word.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. Philippe, thank you for being here today. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you watch or listen, and tune in as we keep talking about the minor prophets this week. Thanks.
All right.